Informative, interesting, intelligent. President and CEO with the Tucson Metropolitan Chamber, Amber Smith with News from the Chamber.
Hello, and welcome to the June edition of News from the Chamber. I am Amber Smith, President and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber. With me is my Vice President, Michael Guymond, and we are recording this podcast in the Business Radio X studio at Stewart Title on Broadway right in Tucson. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Amber.
So this month's conversation will focus on healthcare in Tucson. Tucson has historically been known as a hub for retirees due to our healthcare system and reputation for healthy outdoor living, wellness, and spas, and is consistently ranked high for hiking, biking, other outdoor activities. However, what many don't know is Tucson's also been the foundation of healthcare innovation in integrative medicine, diagnostics, medication monitoring, pharmaceutical development, wellness, and pioneering healthcare reimbursement systems, largely due to our different community partnerships with the university and others. So with us today is Paula Hecht, CEO of Tucson Orthopedic Institute. Also joining us is James Stover, the Medicaid Plan President for Arizona Complete Health, the Centene Corporation Health Plans here in Arizona. And then we have Michael Goforth as the Senior Human Resources Consultant for El Rio Health. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So we are representing a broad spectrum of different aspects of healthcare right here in Tucson. So why don't we start with Paula? Paula, you were listed in Becker's 2011 list of most influential women in healthcare. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and a little bit about Tucson Orthopedic?
Okay, that sounds great, Amber. It's a pleasure to be here today. I've been in healthcare most of my career, CPA by training, 9 years in public accounting, and after that, I worked in public education for 9 years, and then I transitioned into healthcare when my son was a small child. My pediatrician pulled me into the healthcare world, and I've been there ever since. So over 30 years at this point, not over 30 years, over 25 years in healthcare. But I think that this has been my most exciting career ever at Tucson Orthopedic Institute. I get the opportunity to work with 34 amazing physicians and surgeons who specialize in subspecialty orthopedic care. So we have specialists for feet, hands, spine, knees, hips, the whole nine yards, every body part. If there's a joint, we take care of it. And we also have amazing physical therapists. We have PAs, nurse practitioners, nurses, all kinds of clinical staff that work with us. It's an amazing, amazing organization, and we see patients throughout Southern Arizona.
So, and how many employees is that?
We have over 280 employees right now.
Fantastic.
Yes.
So then, James, you have nearly 20 years of Medicaid managed care experience, serving as CEO of the U of A health plan prior to joining Centene. What would you say are the greatest differences between the public and private healthcare sectors?
You know, I think that's a really interesting question, especially in today's market. I think that if I look back 20 years ago, there was a very sort of segregation between sort of the public system around county hospitals and the health departments and things like that, and the more private companies. I would say over the last 20 years, there's been a lot of partnership between the public and private sectors to really capitalize on the strengths of both organizations. So if you've looked at what has happened in Tucson or Southern Arizona, or our organization has partnered with a myriad of county governments, county entities, to ensure we're driving the best healthcare outcomes. In addition, we've had tremendous partnerships with things like law enforcement and justice. So individuals who are identified as needing services, either behavioral health services or substance use disorder services, are able to get those services as opposed to becoming part of the justice system or incarcerated. So I would say as we've moved forward, there's less difference in the two and more synergy and bringing together the aspects of public and private, not only with healthcare, but actually organizations that are really involved and invested in healthcare and really doing what's right for individuals.
So, Michael, Mrs. Michael, can you, you're providing the third perspective. So we have Toy, which is private sector, and then we have James talking that difference of public sector. You're nonprofit sector. So how, what does that look like in comparison to the, you know, other healthcare type of agencies?
Well, I'm currently serving at El Rio Health, and the nonprofit sector to me is probably the most enjoyable part of healthcare. And let me tell you why. Because you really have the ability to touch lives. And we serve, currently El Rio is serving over 100,000 members. And we've had last year, I think about 400,000 encounters. And so it's a really large, and having grown up in Tucson, it started in the 70s when there was the issue of access to care. So as a nonprofit, being able to serve the community and make sure that people have access to care, whether they're insured or uninsured, because we handle insurance as well as, you know, the uninsured population. And I think I have to agree with James. Over the years in healthcare here in Tucson, the integration of services, it's so much better, and the patients can have kind of one-stop shopping these days. And so that's one of the things that I see that's so positive about being in the nonprofit world.
Well, I think that, you know, and James talking about sort of that there was almost a stigma on, you know, those other type of services. And so I really like hearing about the cooperation of the different agencies working with each other more so, which I would assume is for the benefit of all patients.
It is. And the thing we say about Pima County is it's Pima County doesn't act like any other county in the state. We serve.
That's a loaded statement, by the way.
I know, but we serve our community. They're our family. They're our neighbors. They're our friends. And Tucson always finds a way. And I think that is because of all the partnerships.
So we just touched on insurance. So, James, why don't you talk a little bit more about Arizona Complete Health, how that relates to your parent company, Centene, and what your role and presence is in Tucson, and expand a little bit more on those different services you guys offer.
Absolutely. So Centene, as many of you may know, is a Fortune 100 company, very, very large organization based in St. Louis, but is primarily in the Medicaid and public health plan sector. So Medicaid, the marketplace, and some Medicare as well. In Tucson, I'll start at Arizona. So in Arizona, we actually have about 300 to 350,000 lives that we serve throughout all of Arizona. About 200,000 of those are in the Medicaid space, 100,000 or so are in, 100 to 120,000 are in the marketplace, and the rest in the Medicare space. Specifically though, in Arizona, or in Southern Arizona, sorry about that, we have about 225,000 to 250,000 of those lives. So a very, very significant presence in the southern portion of the state. The company has about 2,000 total employees in Arizona, so a fairly large employer in Arizona. Of that, about 800 to 1,000 of those employees are actually in the Tucson market. So Centene has health plans here, which is what I represent, but then they also have things like regional call centers that help people from all states. They have claims processing centers where they process claims, et cetera, from other states. So actually contributes quite a bit to the economy of Arizona and Tucson specifically. The products that we offer, we're part of the Access plans. So we offer the Complete Care plan. for Medicaid in Southern Arizona as well as Maricopa County. And of our 200,000 lives, actually about 120,000 to 140,000 are in Southern Arizona, with about 70,000 of those being actually in Tucson. So have a very, very significant presence in Tucson. We also offer the Marketplace program as well as Medicare programs throughout Southern Arizona. So have a very significant presence in assisting individuals who are on government-sponsored programs.
Related, we have the new Affordable Health Care Act. Mm-hmm. And some of the goals was to lower the cost of health care, be able to have better or expand treatment to all patients so all patients can be covered, and also try to get treatments that otherwise wouldn't have been covered in the past. Would any all of you agree that those goals have been achieved?
I would, mainly because one of the services provided at El Rio is that when people come with no health care, the first thing that happens is they are checked for eligibility. So if they're eligible for the state access program, we get them enrolled in access. If they're not eligible for that, we're accepting all types of insurance. If they're not eligible for that, we make sure that they get onto the marketplace, because we really feel that to have a fully insured product of some sort is really, it behooves them to be on a fully insured or insured product, because then they receive more services. And we actually have so many people in Pima County that are enrolling and making sure that people get in for services. And that, again, that's the partnering to make sure that people have care. Around the cost for the marketplace, kind of up and down, but it's so much better that people at least try and find a product that really suits their needs.
Yeah, and if I can tag on actually to what, because I completely agree with Michael, and if I can tag on to it. So in states that don't have Medicaid expansion, there's a significant problem between the individuals who qualify for Medicaid and those who get the subsidy for the Marketplace plan. Actually, there is no way really for them to get that care. So I think Arizona took a very, very bold step, especially being a somewhat conservative state, mm-hmm. in actually having Medicaid expansion, because mm-hmm. it really does serve those individuals. And if you look at some other states, they just did not do that. So.
And that really happened under Governor Brewer, correct?
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Very, very, very significant, both for the economy of Arizona and for the citizens of Arizona. The other thing that you look at is there were, and sort of the affordability of the Affordable Care Act and those kinds of things, my understanding, and I don't work in a hospital system, but my understanding is that the amount of bad debt or individuals who didn't pay because they were self-pay has significantly went down with, you know, either through Medicaid or through the Marketplace plans, which are the Affordable Care Act plans. So really impacts the economy and the providers in that manner. And then the other, I think, major thing to remember in that is that a lot of the products before had a lot of exclusions to them, right? So there were a lot of either pre-existing condition exclusions or things that just simply weren't covered as part of the plan. So yes, there might have been less expensive plans, but then if you really needed a certain service, it wasn't covered. So then you ended up having to either file, you know, bankruptcy or ended up having to have a big debt with a provider because you didn't have that service. So I absolutely think while there continues to need to be refinements, it has met a lot of the goals that it set out to.
And Paula, you represent the specialist side of that. Mm-hmm. What's your experience in the success of what was trying to be achieved, and then any potential unintended consequences that it may have had on your industry?
So that's a really good question, Amber. I'll put my community hat on and my citizen hat. I think the more people that have coverage, the quicker they're ready to go to the physician when they need to have a care. that's a good for our community. You don't want people to have needs and not be able to afford it or not be able to go to the doctor because they just don't have the funds to pay for it. So I think that part of it's been successful. We see more people in our offices regularly. And I think that lowering the cost of care as an employer, that matters to me too. You know, I've experienced increases in my own health care for our company, and you know, we work to mitigate that regularly, so that's important. So those two areas, I think we have been successful. The unintended consequences of that obviously fall to the providers with more authorization requirements. So it's not like you just walk in the door and you can have all the services you sure. want because you need them or you think you need them. There are many regulatory requirements to get those services, which has a heavy burden on the physician side of the house and probably the hospital side of the house as well. So we have greater staffing, greater regulatory requirements to go through, administrative burden regarding that, that we have to handle and manage on a daily basis. Obviously, we take almost all plans as well, and we see a wide variety of patients throughout Southern Arizona. So, you know, it's been a good thing, but it comes with its challenges.
So, I kind of want to continue this conversation in terms of we all started off talking about, you know, nonprofit versus profit. So we have a good mix here of that, right? But now we're talking about how with the Affordable Care Act, even some of those lines are being blurred in terms of, you know, access to healthcare plans and really trying to give the patient more access to obviously the healthcare system through, you know, whether it's private or public insurance. My question for you then is, are just the healthcare lines between public and private continue to be blurred themselves, right? So, I mean, are we kind of going down that path too, where it doesn't really matter? I mean, you guys are all businesses, mm-hmm. right? And you right. all have competitors.
We do.
And so I'm really interested, especially from the healthcare industry perspective, since every single one of you want to help people. It is all of your goals to provide care for people. But at the same time, you also, you know, compete on different levels of how to provide that. And obviously, you, Paula, you're very specialized. You deal with, you know, joints and all that other stuff. whereas there's, you know, other hospitals that, uh-huh. that serve. So I'm just very curious about even that level of and this is for anyone, obviously, but that level of healthcare between public and private, even if that's even being blurred.
I'd love to offer 2 points on that, Michael. You know, because there are many of us in the space, in the healthcare space, many hospitals in town, many payers, many physician practices, the labor market is how we compete probably head-to-head most clearly. We need great people to work in our organizations that truly want to take care of patients. And if we always put the patient first, we need people to come in and place that focus on the patient and, you know, come with great work skills, sometimes specialized in nature. So we're all competing for specialized healthcare staff to work in our clinics or in our insurance company or in our hospitals. So that, you know, that is a challenge for each of us. You know, and I think that clearly it's a community challenge, you know, so the labor is really a big deal. But I want you to imagine that you're a brand new entrant into the healthcare employment, and you're going to go down and check patients in to a clinic, and you're going to ask them what their insurance is, okay? And El Rio may be simpler, but in our world, there are hundreds of different insurance plans. It's not like you go to the grocery store, you write a check or give your check card or your credit card and you pay your bill and you walk out because you're all going to pay the same thing. In our world, it's all different. The co-pays are different. The deductibles are different. Out-of-pocket's different for everybody. And we're expecting one person to really garner all that knowledge, obviously computer-assisted with, you know, programs, but it's changing so rapidly, Michael, that it's difficult to keep up with. I had a CEO luncheon today with other physician group CEOs, and we meet regularly to talk about challenges and how we can assist each other. But we were trying to put together a matrix of all the different types of insurance plans that are in the market right now, because they're rapidly changing and there's new entrants all the time, and it's hard to know who's on first. So on that side of it, it's a huge challenge.
Yeah, and I would say I totally agree. And then to the point of the blurred lines, right? So Medicaid and Medicare are public insurance plans, right? But they privatize them through working with corporations like Centene or other insurance plans to really garner those synergies between what the public system has and what the private system can do from, you know, that perspective. So I would say every day, you know, we have in the Medicaid space, we have six major competitors in Arizona. But at the end of the day, really, it's all of our responsibility to continue to identify ways that we can improve the health of our communities. I mean, I think that's what all of us around the table do. And while we're going to have, you know, challenges and differences and even competition with either other health plans or other community health centers or specialty providers, at the end of the day, I think we're all working to make sure that we're meeting that goal. And the more we can partner with the public sector, I think the better off we are, because really we can move the dial on all of those things that we're looking at. We can integrate services better. You know, working with El Rio, they've done a fantastic job of really creating an integrated model, just like a lot of other providers in the community. But since they're at the table with me, I should, you know, point them out. But of integrating those services. And we've seen the impact of integration of services for individuals with a serious mental illness. The integration of services have improved ED utilization. It's improved a lot of things. When you look at their physical health outcomes, their physical health outcomes have improved. So I don't think that we can do that without that partnership and that blurred line with the public sector.
And I think I'd like to just add one thing, and that is that it's allowed us to be very innovative and creative as providers and insurance companies. For example, Health on Broadway mm-hmm. is in conjunction with Tucson Medical Center. And this fall,
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, this fall, we're getting ready to open Tucson Medical Center and El Rio campus at the university. So Health on University campus.
That's awesome.
So, I think that sometimes we could just sit back and say, oh, this is so terrible. But instead, no, it's very innovative. And new things are happening, and we're really serving the community, all of us combined.
Well, Amber, Paula opened the door for you, because I know she mentioned the word workforce development in some form or fashion, and that's your favorite subject. So I know you've got tons of questions on workforce development. So well, 1, 2, 3, go.
Well, you're not wrong. And the question I was originally going to ask prior to that segue is, what is your biggest challenge that you are seeing right now? Because when we've been talking to folks of other industries, it has been workforce development, whether that is retaining talent, recruiting talent, making sure you're going to have talent filling the pipeline 10, 15, 20 years from now. So I'm going to first start there. Is that your biggest challenge?
No question. Absolutely our biggest challenge right now.
So Paula, would you say it's your biggest challenge because you are a specialty provider, or no, it's some of those entry-level positions?
No, I would say, well, obviously there's a national physician shortage. So there are critical areas that, you know, we need physicians or surgeons in. Therapists, physical therapists, you know, we obviously need great therapists, and that, you know, is a little bit of a shortage area. But it's every level of job, whether you're doing, you know, specialized imaging or just checking someone in at the front desk, they're all super important to us. I mean, we're a team, and every single, from the time the phone is answered to the time the surgeon sees the patient, every component of that is very, very important. So having first someone who comes in the door and really wants to take care of patients. You have to have that right approach in your personality to really want to care for someone and put the patient first, and then have a great work ethic, really want to be a team player and abide by all the rules and regulations we have in healthcare now. HIPAA concerns, making sure privacy is respected, making sure that medicines are guarded and taken good care of, during the day. And so again, we just can't find enough. We like to say sometimes we want to collect unicorns, that great person that just wants to be an amazing team member. So and we're constantly looking for that. And so, again, we're reaching out to the universities and the colleges, but it is my number one challenge.
So, Michael, this is what you do.
And it's certainly a challenge for, I think, El Rio, because when you think about it, I think, 3 years ago, we were at about 900 employees. We're now over 1,300. Wow. And so we're continuing to grow and build. We've just opened the big Cherry Bell location and site. So every time you open a new site, you have... you have to staff it, right? And so that's a part of it. And, it's not just the recruiting, it's the retention and staying viable in the market. But, and there's one other thing that adds to that. Because El Rio is very values our existing employees. We've started a career development program so that, those people that are coming in have a path to, because we don't want to lose them. And so we're trying to help them. We have reimbursement programs for education. But with that, you're developing internally, and then you're having to fill those positions that when Absolutely. They move forward. So I think that is probably for this community. And I was going to say that later, because we really appreciate the chamber's efforts around the healthcare task force that has been developed and brought so many of us together to talk about these issues jointly. So another community effort. And that's why I say this Pima County is just a wonderful place to live and work.
And you had mentioned the University of Arizona and the joint TMC El Rio campus. Is that a campus for providing healthcare to those students, or is that a campus to grow students into healthcare?
It can be both, because, some of the programs that El Rio do, we have students coming in for medical, for dental, for nursing, for public health, for residents. We're trying to accept those and work with the education systems to bring them in so that we train them and hope that, as they're training, they like it there enough to stay with us. Or I guess we could share.
Oh, absolutely. And we do the same thing, Amber. We work with every school that will provide us with students. And,
exactly.
and that's probably the primary source of our new hires. They come as students, they spend time with us, or we have interns. We work with high schools. We bring students in from San Miguel. We've had students from there the last 2 years.
And
they are wonderful. Yes. I mean, they've been great.
You're talking, this is a job shadow program?
They actually work with us. So in some of the schools, they're doing job shadowing for like some of the MA care or those that have to have a certification. But for students, I mean, we bring them in, we give them tasks that we think are appropriate for students, that are still in high school to do for us. But there's lots of jobs that can be done, Michael. And again, a student with a great work ethic and a great customer service approach, we would love to hire them down the road. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's been wonderful for us, Pima, University of Arizona, the school system, and then all the high schools. I mean, yeah, they've been great.
Well, James, you're not hiring physicians, but but you may have your own unique workforce challenges.
Sure. And where I wanted to go with that is we do have a few who do medical review, it's all right. I'll forgive you this one time. We actually, in some ways, compete with the providers a little bit in that aspect, because we have nurses, we have clinical social workers who are doing care management, who are helping identify individuals' needs and getting them to the right providers for that care. We have peer support specialists for behavioral health services and those kinds of things, which is absolutely a challenge. But actually, I wanted to tag on to what Michael and Paula said, because our biggest challenge actually as a health plan is ensuring that the workforce in the provider community is also sufficient. So we have a very, very significant responsibility to our members to make sure that they are getting the care in the communities that they're in and that it's the appropriate level of care. And in Tucson, it's absolutely an issue and a concern. But then when you start looking outside of Tucson, even in Pima County, so I don't know if it's going to be asked later or not, but I'm from the metropolis of Ajo, Arizona. You know, I mean, huge, yes, huge, huge city. But when you look at places, and most people don't even know Ajo is in Pima County because it's so far away, right? But if you look at that, or if you look at other rural communities that Tucson serves, so if you look at, you know, the Cochise communities, or even as far as Yuma, which I'll be spending the next 2 days in.
at least it's not July.
that is true. That is true. A little bit cooler. There are some really, really significant challenges with being able to recruit talented individuals, to having enough individuals in the communities. And I think that it's really the work that we do here in Tucson that helps bolster that. And there's a few things that, you know, I don't know if we're going to talk about solutions later, if this is the time to talk about solutions
right
now.
That's the exact segue I was going towards.
but we, you know, we can talk about some of the solutions we're employing with the U of A and through, you know, telehealth services and those kinds of things. But I would say that from that perspective, given the fact that a lot of the individuals we serve are rural, it's how do we leverage the actual resources that Tucson does have for the rural communities to make sure that we're also supporting sort of the economic development as well as the communities of all of Southern Arizona.
So there's two different workforce solution questions. So on one side is, what is the solution in being able to fill positions? And then my second question is how are you handling the fact that if you don't have enough workforce to be able to serve the population, what are solutions in being able to better utilize that until we can grow our workforce to right size the numbers?
You know, well, I'll start. Well, because again, I want to, well, absolutely, we need individuals, and we have 2,000 employees. That's a lot of employees. I really want to keep it focused on the services that the community receives, and that really is through the provider offices and especially in the rural communities. So I think that there's a couple of things that we've done that I think are helpful. So one is to make sure that you have the appropriate level of practitioner who is being able to serve that individual. So one specific example I have is that Arizona is about a year behind the national average for the diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. And that is primarily related to the number of practitioners who are able to do that in Arizona. So it's either psychiatrists, developmental pediatricians, or psychologists. So one of the solutions that we're working with the U of A on is to have pediatric and psychiatric nurse practitioners do a certificate program in which they would be specially trained in the diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. So that way we will have more practitioners to be able to see and diagnose that. And I'm sure everybody knows that the younger you are when you're diagnosed, the better outcomes you'll have as you continue to move forward. So very, very significant for Arizona, and think that this, the U of A College of Nursing has been a tremendous partner in looking at that. The use of community health workers, right, especially in rural communities, because a lot of times what we find is that people's poor outcomes are actually related to their ability to be able to engage. The healthcare system is complicated. I mean, you heard Paula talk about how complicated it is for them. If you're a user of the healthcare system and don't have experience with it, it's very, very complicated. And community health workers who tend to be lay people can really help get people engaged. And that's what we see a lot of times, is that it's the engagement and the ability to figure out the system and to understand the system and to and to know how that works. And then lastly, I would say, is our ability to be able to utilize resources we have for rural communities. So we have a program called Project Echo. And what Project Echo is it's a telehealth program where we do monthly seminars with providers in rural communities around the treatment of certain issues. So we use specialists from the university, we did one, I actually believe, with El Rio around different aspects. But we use individuals who have specialized knowledge to get that information out to the rural community so those providers feel more comfortable in handling those issues, as well as the use of telemedicine, right? So the ability to be able to use telemedicine in those rural communities to be able to serve a greater population. So those are just some of the solutions. As a health insurer, we're working on with our provider partners to be able to address some of those issues.
Well, and Michael, I want to bring it to you because I know that El Rio has been doing some unique things as well. And it's that other providers part. And what I'm referencing is the non-traditional one, your paramedics. And so I know that El Rio has been working with Tucson Fire Department on being able to address patient needs. So can you speak to that?
Yes, and several other things, because James kind of touched on the community health the extender services. So El Rio uses community health advisors that do a lot of education and referrals and taking care of things that you may have had to have extra people doing that to get care coordinated. So they've got that effort going. They're working with the fire departments because they're identifying people that are, I don't know the best word to use, but they're frequent. In healthcare, we call them frequent flyers.
Yes.
Right?
The fire department uses the same term.
Yes. So as our nurses, our triage nurses are working, and to James's point, in their contracts, in contracts that we have with them, they have nursing follow-up. Some of our contracts, we actually do the follow-up for the insurance company using our triage nurses. So there are so many new and, as I mentioned earlier, innovative things that we're doing at El Rio to try and keep people well and to address chronic issues outside of hospital settings and to reduce the emergency room visits. Again, James, because this is all kind of an integration with our partners, the health insurance companies and providers. Well, better care.
It seems to me that integration is a huge contributing part to keeping the cost of healthcare down. I mean, the point that you just made is if you're able to be able to treat patients to where they don't end up in the ER, that immediately is trying to keep those pricings moderate. Paula.
That's absolutely critical. And I would say the same thing. We have Care Navigator who works with patients post-surgery to be available like 24/7. Say you have knee surgery, your knee is swollen or it looks red and you're scared, you know, the care navigator can talk them through the symptoms. You know, we can get a surgeon on the line if we need to. We can help them navigate through that scary period. And we talk to them before the surgery. We have them go to prehab, you know, to take a look at what type of therapy regimen will be appropriate for them post-surgery. And again, we look at the most appropriate, lowest cost setting for that to keep the spend down, which is, you know, important. But also every patient's different. So we have to look at the individual patient and see how are they going to recover best, you know, in which setting will help them the most. So again, we utilize care navigation. We have after hours care, which is great. So all injuries don't happen between 8 and 5 every day. So we are open from 5 to 9 Monday through Friday. We're also open on Saturdays. For those acute injuries that happen that you really don't need to go to the emergency department for. And that's been a huge satisfier for patients. It's been a great cost savings mechanism for the community. And we use our nurse practitioners and our PAs in that setting. We have lots of great nurse practitioners and PAs. So we try to leverage the skills of everybody. When there are shortages, everybody does a little more. So we have a lot of cross-trained individuals, let me say that. And we're pursuing telehealth, looking at the Benson area and how we can provide surgical care, and consultation in that mechanism. So back to Michael's point, though, creativity and innovation and holding hands with each other in the healthcare environment will get us through this. I think also really setting the expectations early on in the training programs of what we're looking for and making sure that students know what types of careers are out there to come into. I wish that there had been this type of shortage when I came out of school, in high school. I remember coming out thinking, oh, it's going to be so hard to get a job. But again, if students know what's out there and what's available, clearly matching their skill set with these types of jobs, the earlier we get started, the better.
Amber, the other one that I just wanted to mention that I think that we sometimes overlook is really the use of peer support. So these are typically individuals who have some sort of lived experience, or they're a family member of somebody who has a lived experience. So for instance, somebody who might have a mental illness or a substance use issue, or it could be somebody who has had diabetes. We've seen great success with using peer support to really help those individuals understand and connect. And again, what we see a lot of times from more of a chronic condition perspective or those kinds of things is that it's really that ability to understand and connect and not feel like you're alone and having all of those sort of support systems. And peer supports actually are a billable service in the Medicaid world. They're utilized somewhat, but I think that that's one that we often don't think about and I think is actually really, really critical in continuing to help improve people's lives.
Well, and that touched on an effort that the chamber is talking about is the opioid epidemic. And we know that it's touched on your guys' industry significantly, but the perspective that we're looking at it also includes employer assistance. Is how can those employers help employees that are suffering from addiction or have a family member that is? So how are your organizations really working within that area of what seems to be a national crisis?
So I will say that we try to manage expectations in advance of surgery on what will be prescribed.
Pain management,
what will be prescribed and what will not. We have a huge research arm of Tucson Orthopedic. We're constantly researching alternative treatments rather than opioid for pain relief. We explore different offerings in the community to see how we can avoid the use of opioids. But at the end of the day, it's establishing that good patient rapport and helping them understand that this is not going to be something that we're going to enable or perpetuate. And it's very deliberate. There's electronic prescribing for controlled substances law in place that, providers are working through to make sure that that's all done electronically so we can prevent any inappropriate use of opioids through our prescribing.
The duplication.
Yes, exactly. So I think that's going to be very helpful. But again, comes with some pain on our end as we get all those processes in place and get that done. But again, it's at the end result, hopefully will be a better and improved system for that.
And El Rio works closely with Pima County. And I don't know if you all know, but Pima County had their needs assessment posted on their website. Pima County has been doing lots of outreach and education. And one of the things that El Rio has done at the Cherry Bell location is they have a MAT program, which is the Medication Assisted Treatment Program.
Oh.
And so we have a phone number and we're getting that number out there so that people can come and get some help and get control of their lives and have I was shocked when I heard some of the statistics that it takes about 5 days for somebody to start getting addicted onto an opioid. Mm-hmm. And so we have quite a crisis in Pima County. So we also were quite pleased to hear that the chamber was looking at ways to help address as a community again, coming together to talk about the opioid situation.
Yeah. And I'll, I think your question started off with how as employers are we doing it? So I want to address that, but also just talk about some of the great things in the community, if that's mm-hmm. okay. So I would say from an employer standpoint, we absolutely have employee assistance programs and those kinds of things. But I would think one of the biggest issues, both from an employer group and in the community in general, is the stigma around substance use, right? Yes. There's a stigma around people wanting to ask for help because of how they feel people are going to feel about them as an individual. So our organization does a lot of training and work with our staff. And again, we employ peer supports actually on our staff who've had substance use issues or other kinds of issues, which I think help educate us and allow us to be better advocates and helpers of our members. So from that standpoint, I think it's incumbent upon all of us to really ensure that our employees understand what programs are available to them, but also to help reduce the stigma within our organizations. From a community perspective, I think absolutely the use of the medication-assisted treatment centers that Michael was talking about is a very, very significant is a part of the solution. I would be very, very remiss if I didn't thank, Governor Ducey and and sort of federal lawmakers for the amount of grant dollars and dollars that have been allocated to really ensuring that we are helping individuals with substance use disorder. But it really takes that partnership, and that's really part of the benefit of integration. So we see a lot of individuals who go into the hospital for cellulitis. Well, their cellulitis is actually created by IV drug use. But if you're just treating the cellulitis and you're not getting them to a provider who has MAT treatment or who has other services, then you're never going to solve the problem. So I think the awareness, the partnership with the providers, and just that reduction of stigma around they need help and it's okay to ask for help.
Paula, you mentioned expanding services into Benson. Mm-hmm. And then James, I know you grew up in Ajo. How is it different in, what are the major differences in the provided healthcare in rural versus urban areas? I mean, obviously there's more services available in urban, but what are some other areas that may not be as well known in some of those challenges?
Well, I mean, I think we have right now we have a satellite in Green Valley. Obviously, we'll start to do some telehealth. We actually have a surgeon who flies down to Bisbee and Douglas to provide services regularly, and he sees patients there, provides surgery in those areas, and God love him for that. You know, he's a trooper. He goes out to those areas regularly, and but again, it takes it's not as an efficient day for a surgeon to drive or fly a great distance to do that, but it's important, and that's his mission, and he enjoys that. So really, it's access to your office staff. Obviously, if you're driving to a different clinic area, you may not have the staff that you work with every day. So that's a little more inefficiency in the practice setting. But I think those partnerships is go back to what Michael said. If you can partner with the hospital system there or other clinics there to integrate the services, then it's a much more seamless process. But again, I think the only challenge is really, and as a private business, our challenge is creating that environment that we can provide great care in an affordable manner, because we live and die by what we collect, and we have expenses that obviously keep going up every year as well. So how can we provide those services efficiently and provide great, excellent care? Because you don't want to minimize the quality of that service just because it's in a rural area. So you have to make certain that it's a high-quality service being delivered.
Yeah, I would agree with Paula. So we do a lot of work with tribal nations that I know Michael has in her past. We do a lot of work on the Tonawatam Nation and others. And I just use that one because the distance of that nation from Tucson is, fairly significant. So I think it's really incumbent upon both the insurers and the providers to work closely together to understand the sustainability of some of that, those services. Paula talked earlier about, many, many different administrative processes that they have to go through. So what can we do to, as partners, to make that work? How can we look at the overall win-win so we can, address some of those rural issues for providers who are willing to travel to rural areas? And then I think the other piece is, in some cases, what can we do to minimize barriers for individuals who live in those communities? So for instance, it may be that the only service we can provide in Cochise County, for instance, is in Sierra Vista. So then how do we reduce the barriers of transportation and those kinds of things for individuals having to come from Douglas and Wilcox and Benson and other places? So I think that's really where the healthcare community has to come together to say, okay, if a surgeon is flying to, I forget where they're flying to, sorry, Paula.
Bisbee and Douglas.
Bisbee and Douglas, yes. They likely probably aren't, that's probably not a sustainable model for Toy, right? I mean, just from that specifically, right? So how do we look at the entire system to make sure that the entire system is sustainable?
And so, Michael, you were the tribal health director for Pasco Yaqui Tribe of Arizona and Fort Mojave Indian Tribe. What's your perspective on that?
Well, it's interesting because when I was thinking about working at the tribe, some of their issues are very different because of the community makeup and how the funding is sent to them. Correct. So they can get fragmented. But recently in talking with the Yaqui tribe, because El Rio works very closely with them and provides a lot of their medical care, and they've done amazing things within their own clinics. And I was having a conversation with them. And the two things that they find a challenge recently are the, and I'm going to say this wrong, so help me with this word, the epidemiological data is a challenge for them, because at a state and county level, sometimes their members are identified as Native American, but not Yaqui specific, or they're identified as Hispanic. And so when they're trying to make big decisions around healthcare and program changes and use of resources for developing programs, and they can't get the data to understand what the real issues are, that's one of their issues. The other one that they mentioned recently was around the homeless. And I think this will go back to one of James's statements earlier. In the criminal justice system, because when their members are off reservation or in an area where they are incarcerated, or they're, say, in Pima County, they were talking about they have an issue trying to get involuntary commitments because they don't have their own facilities on reservation. And so they wind up in the criminal justice system and working with courts, and their tribal courts trying to coordinate with other courts. And this is a health impact also in the behavioral health area. So they have many challenges that they're working on. They have good support, but those were the two that they really identified most lately.
So let's go a completely different direction. What does our healthcare environment in Arizona, how does it compare to other states?
Well, and maybe if I can tag on to that, we back in the 40s and 50s, Arizona actually advertised that this was, if you had tuberculosis, this was the place to come. The arid environment helped with that. And so it was, you know, there was a committee of the chamber called the Tucson Sunshine Climate Club. And it was kind of the precursor to Visit Tucson. And they were part of that effort. It was somewhat of a medical tourism component. And you've talked earlier about some of the solutions that you are enacting, particularly as it relates somewhat to workforce development. You, James, you're on the Sun Corridor Board of Directors, and Sun Corridor is all about attracting new companies to Tucson. Healthcare is a big component of that. So maybe, you know, in that answer, also try to talk about, like, what are we doing really well in healthcare? What can we sell to whether it's companies or visitors or you name it, that really makes Tucson that attractive place to be from a healthcare perspective?
Sure, I'll start off, and it's going to be, and I'll make the connection, but I think that we have a very, very, very strong Medicaid system in Arizona from a perspective of program, from a perspective of really looking at the ability to partner with non-traditional types of partners, so the justice system and those different kinds of partners, to be able to serve the individuals. And Arizona, I think, nationally is sort of looked at as a gold standard sort of amongst mm-hmm. Medicaid and Medicaid managed care from cost perspective, from what we do in the crisis system. I mean, I can't say enough about the collaborations between the crisis providers at the resource center, the justice involved individuals, the plans, etc., on what they do. With that, the focus on integration between physical and behavioral health and really improving those outcomes. And I think the reason that that's important to Arizona and the economy of Arizona as you're looking at attracting new businesses, because you say, okay, so individuals typically on the Medicaid system might not be individuals who would be working potentially at new businesses that were coming. So how does that sort of apply, you know, going forward? So if you have, I think, a system, in, as you do in other states, that is more fractured and fragmented and less people have access to services and those kinds of things, you have significant issues with ED wait times and individuals who have more behavioral health or psychiatric issues in EDs as opposed to the crisis resource center or into other crisis centers, which then detracts from people wanting to come to Arizona, right? Because then you have issues with getting, if you have a true emergency that you need to get into the emergency room, it's clogged with individuals who shouldn't be there because you don't have a good system that's taking care of members. Do we have issues? Absolutely. Every state has issues. But I would say, comparatively speaking, to many, many other states, the fact that we have such a good private-public partnership, the fact that we have county governments, Pima County is always at the table with us trying to solve these issues with Francisco Garcia and Paula Pereira and Jan Lesher and those individuals. Pima County Sheriff, the Tucson Police Chief, they are always working on all of these different solutions, which also improves our public safety, right? So if we now have individuals who are riding along with our police officers, which we do in many cases, who are helping de-escalate crisis situations and those kinds of things, it's creating a safer environment. It's allowing our police officers to get back onto the streets faster, which is creating better safety for Tucson, and it's creating a better healthcare system. So I think that people don't always think about that. They think about, you know, and this is very important too, but they think about the tertiary and quaternary care that hospitals can provide or, you know, those kinds of things, but don't think about how that public system actually creates the foundation and base of sort of what the rest is built on.
Closing comments, Paula or Michael?
No, I would agree. And I've obviously lived in the South most of my life, but been here in Arizona for 10 years. And I have to say that two things that make it so attractive to me are and my husband's a physician, so I can say it is the most collaborative medical community, you know, I've ever seen. The physicians, all the caregivers work so well together, and really try to come together to provide an amazing healthcare experience for our community, and that continues to improve every single year that I've been here. And it's a great place to live. I mean, think about recovery. If you have to have surgical care, our hashtag is get back in the game. But what better place to recover than Tucson, Arizona, or the state of Arizona, because the weather is remarkable. You can get outside. You can get moving quicker and faster. You don't suffer brutally cold weather. So it's a wonderful place to be.
Michael. Okay. So we have a new effort in front of us, and you're going to hear this term quite often, the social determinants of health. And so I think that is the next mission for all of the rest of us, because, you know, it involves your socioeconomic status, your education, your physical environment, your employment, your social support systems, and access to healthcare. So I think we're up for it. And I think that with all the partners, and thank you to the Chamber for helping to support some of these work groups for us and continue bringing us together.
Thank you very much. Thank you again to our guests today, Paula Heck, CEO of Tucson Orthopedic Institute, James Stover, Medicaid Plan President for Arizona Complete Health, the Centene Corporation Health Plans in Arizona, and Michelle Goforth, the Senior Human Resource Consultant for El Rio Health. If you would like to reach out to any of these individuals, certainly email me at amber@tucsonchamber.org, and I will connect you. And thank you all so much. Mr. Guymon, final words.
Well, I would say that things that we are doing with the Healthcare Roundtable, it's been mentioned quite a bit during this podcast, I think we're on the right track. I think bringing these groups together as from particularly a workforce development standpoint, because there are so many other aspects of this healthcare picture, as we've discussed with the mayor when he put together the healthcare sector partnership probably about 4 years ago. When he asked us to take on the workforce development component, we really want to get to that. We want to make sure that we are continuing to work with our partners that are in this room today, as well as all the others that are not only chamber members, but play in this realm. We're ready to take this on. We know this is not a short-term solution. This is really a long-term solution, but we're willing to work with the partners to address these issues to make sure that we continue to provide the right kind of innovative and creative health that we possibly can.
Thank you guys all so very much. Here we are at Tucson Business Radio X Studio at Stuart Title on Broadway. See you next month.